to happen for the Cardinals to do it?
Yeah, again, depending on what's there on the board, we'll continue to trust our board as we have in the past. And if there are opportunities to move back and acquire more picks, I think we'll do it.
That's Steve Keim yesterday at the NFL Combine. Good morning. It's Doug and Wolf. We're live in the Auction Community Studios. And the thing that's there with Steve Keim, sure, we'll do it, but how about at number four?
It has danger. You know, what happens if you trade back eight spots? You know, we're at four. Let's say we trade back to eight. There's only four players that we like. What if they're all gone? Now what are you going to do?
That's Dave Gettleman, the NFL Combine yesterday, and he went into a little bit, you know, deeper into the situation, but he said he's open for business. He'll listen to anybody at number four, and that's normal to say that you're open for business, but I do believe it changes everything. The Giants are in the same position as the Cardinals. If you have your quarterback and you're drafting in the top 10, you'll always listen to the other teams that are desperate to go get a quarterback, and I believe anybody that's drafting somebody not named Joe Burrow in the top 15 picks that plays quarterback, you're desperate.
Look, I have a question for you, honestly. Do you think Joe Burrow's going to make the difference for the Cincinnati Bengals?
Say it again.
Do you think Joe Burrow's going to make the difference for the Cincinnati Bengals?
Long-term, yes.
Put Tom Brady on that team. Put Pat Mahomes on that
team.
That's
why I say long. Well,
I don't see it. I just don't see it.
Your question is fair because the Bengals are so bad, you assume they'll fail.
Well, I do. I mean, they've never shown us really. I mean, look, it's also kind of unfair to say that. I called Cincinnati Bengals, you know, NFL Siberia earlier, but the truth is they actually had a lot of playoff years with Marvin Lewis. I mean, they had a couple playoff years there.
This will help you if you want a little dose of Bengals history. Have you ever heard of the name Bo Jackson?
Of course.
The game he hurt his hip is the last game the Bengals won a playoff game. That was a playoff game. The Bengals beat the Raiders when Bo Jackson hurt his hip. That's the last playoff victory in Bengals history. So when you think of how many those of you right now that are listening to this show, that Bo Jackson is only a memory. It's only a video memory. Those of you that are about 25 years old. Those of you that are in your 30s that you kind of remember, people like me that are 40 and above that thought, oh my gosh, with Bo Jackson. And yet, it's been that long. I understand the question, but I still don't think that changes what the Bengals should do, even though they've been a failure all these years.
The reason why I ask is because I feel like every team should be open for business. Why would every team not be open for business? If you're the Cincinnati Bengals, Joe Burrow, you're not going to draft Joe Burrow this year. He's not going to come in and win 10, 11, 12 games for you and get you to the playoffs. That team has so much dysfunction in their scouting department, in their ownership group,
yep,
in their executive team. They hired Zach Taylor, who I like. He's a good guy. He's a friend. His brother is the quarterback coach for the Eagles, also a good friend. Literally, when he got the job with the Rams, called me, moved into my hometown, asked me where he should buy a house in Thousand. It's like that close of a friend. But Zach Taylor is not ready to be an NFL head coach right now, and I think he showed that last year. And now you're going to ask him and this team to build an organization top to bottom. This team has so many needs. If you're the Cincinnati Bengals, look, I'm not saying to do this, and so don't blow up my Twitter feed. I'm just saying if you're the Cincinnati Bengals and somebody comes to you and says, I'll give you three first round picks for that number one overall pick, how are you not open for business?
Let me challenge you on that. Why would that do any good if the Bengals don't get those picks right?
Because I agree with you, so, but you get more cracks at the apple. You get more bites at it. You get more chances to see if you can hit on something. All I'm saying is I think this draft, not this draft, all drafts are very difficult.
And when you look at Bengals, Cardinals, Giants, those are three teams that in recent memory for Cardinals and most memory of the Giants for, what, 10 years maybe a little less than that, and Bengals in their history since Bo Jackson beating him, they need to get these drafts right, and they haven't.
And again, maybe it's just confirmation bias on my part or wishful thinking on my part, because I have this weird feeling that Bill Belichick's going to do something wild in this draft and find a way to get Joe Burrow or Tua Tagovailoa. I just have like a weird feeling. Probably not going to happen, but maybe I'm want it to happen.
I'll say it 5 million times. Your need for a quarterback does not make that quarterback a good quarterback.
Correct.
And I don't know why so many teams continue to fail on that exact point.
Correct. I mean, these quarterbacks are only going to be as good as the organization and the guys that they have around them. And look, I get it. I get it. Look, Patrick Mahomes is a once-in-a-generational talent, but he's got a lot of talent on that team. Brett Veach is a very good general manager. The Hunt family's done a great job with their ownership group. Andy Reid had a plan for Patrick Mahomes. I don't see any of that, with the Cincinnati Bengals or half these other teams. And look, I'm probably a little bit more chapped than some other people about the Bengals because one of the players I've worked with for a long time was drafted there last year in the fourth round by the Bengals, the first pick in the fourth round. He's a Paradise Valley high school kid here. Think about this. The Cincinnati Bengals drafted two players from Paradise Valley High School last year. Paradise Valley High School had more players drafted in the NFL in Arizona last year than any other school in Arizona. That includes Saguaro, Chandler, Hamilton, all the big schools, okay? So I'm a little bitter because they throw him out there as a rookie, makes his first start against the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, who does that?
Who does that
to a guy? Hey, your first pick in the fourth round, we're gonna get you some action. Your first start's going to be against the Baltimore Ravens. Let's go.
And I'm okay with that if you stick with them.
Sure, but
it's when you don't stick with them. Like, well, then what are you doing? Coming up next, Mike Hazen on Mason Saunders. Mike says his feet don't fit into boots. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Time to take a look at the Arizona Sports Poll Question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
Go for it, Maloney.
What will be a bigger strength for the D-backs? Pitching or hitting?
For the first time, that's a good question. And I don't mean like in the history of our poll questions, but I mean for the Diamondbacks under Mike Hazen, it's almost always been pitching, just dominantly pitching. I'm going to say hitting for the first time will be a bigger strength. Because the depth of the pitching is better than the hitting. But I don't believe you have the top-notch shutdown. As much as I love the Madison Bumgarner signing, I'm not ready to say he's a true every single game, still number one, eight innings pitch, two earned run ace. And if you're not there, but I think their number four and five guy in the rotation is better than the other team's four and five guy. Overall, I go hitting.
It's a good question. I mean, look, I think Mike Hazen has done a good job putting this roster together and putting this team together, but I still think that when you heard his answer when he was on the radio just a minute ago or a couple segments ago, I feel like he still wants to be a good pitching team that can play defense, and so I think the pitching's still going to be the best part of this team.
What's the answer, Maloney?
58% say pitching, 42% say hitting.
I accept being in the minority on that one because I totally understand why anybody would say pitching. They've got seriously, I would say nine human beings competing for five spots in the starting rotation. And I mean a legitimate competition. This is a really good job of creating competition in camp. They've got an improved bullpen from last year. So I totally accept anybody that disagrees with me on that.
Who's the competition between for their starters?
Well, when I list the names, you know, I assume you're going to blast me if I say Madison Bumgarner because he's not competing in any way for a spot. So I get that. But when I go through them, and this is mostly off the top of my head, I'm going to cheat a little bit so I can get everybody in. But Robbie Ray, Madison Bumgarner are two guys that are going to be there no matter what. I assume Zach Gallen would be. He's actually my favorite guy on the rotation. I think it was an unbelievable trade with the Miami Marlins. Just a steal to get Zach Gallen. And then I think you have a massive battle going on between Merrill Kelly, Luke Weaver, Mike Leake, John Duplantier. I don't think Weidenauer's really in the battle necessarily.
Alex Young.
I am in huge favor of Alex Young. Thank you, Bear. In huge favor of Alex Young, but I think he might end up being the loser and say, okay, because we've got so many options left on you, we're either going to put you in the bullpen or send you down to Reno and be on starting duty there. So as soon as somebody gets hurt, you're already a starter stretched out and you're the first guy up. But I think off the top of my head, I just listed about seven or eight names. And that doesn't even, you know, include the bullpen or the loser who of the starting rotation battle that might go to the bullpen and push somebody else out.
Of those names, anybody that's not going to be on the roster opening day?
even though I said I love him, I could easily see Alex Young being the guy that doesn't win the spot, and then they have a decision, bullpen or rotation in Reno. And I think they might decide rotation in Reno. And it's really like, you know, it's kind of different than any other sport. It's like you're the sixth starter. You're the sixth starting pitcher on a team that has five. But you're number six. But we don't want you up here on the major league roster if you're number six, because then you're not starting. You're now pitching two innings, three innings. So you come in, give it all you've got for two innings, and then you're done. While a starter is stretch yourself out, make sure you can go six innings. So it's better to be in Reno if you're doing that. So I would say Alex Young. If you did, you heard Rudy Carpenter filling in for Wolf just bring up something that Mike Hazen said, and we were teasing him with it first about whether or not you will go to rodeos to find starting pitching.
How did I wonder what the first question was going to be about when I called in? That's fair. No, I will not be going to a rodeo. I watch it on TV sometimes when I'm, you know, just going through the channels. But
when we got serious about it, we asked, what was the conversation about? What did you say? What are the rules? Because everybody knows players have to have off-season stuff or even in-season breaks. They've got to have something that gets their mind off the game. Yet at the same time, this guy falls off a horse doing something that's in violation of the contract. What are we doing here? You're supposed to be out there on the mound healthy, and you got hurt doing something that's in violation of your contract. What would we do then? And he said,
you know, look, players have things outside in their lives that they do in the off season when we want them to, you know, be able to take a deep breath, get away from the game. The game can be very, very tiresome mentally, just given the grind of the 7 months of a season. But we want it done safely too. I think his health and safety is number one priority for us and for him. Mm-hmm. And when we've talked to him over the last few months, we know where his priorities are in terms of helping us win and get into the postseason and move on from there.
But he never specifically said, as much as we tried, we have blocked Mason Saunders from ever appearing on planet Earth again.
No, but I thought he said something even more telling than that. He thought that that Madison Bumgarner or Mason Saunders wanting to ride horses and participate in what he was participating in that realm of his life was part of the reason why he came to Arizona.
Oh, he wasn't. Yeah, he admitted that.
You know, like I said the other day, look, we, you know, it happened before he got here. He has been riding horses his entire life. We knew it was part of what he loved to do as we were doing background on him in signing here. Mm-hmm. And I think it was one of our advantages where we were situated to trying to be able to sign him.
I think it's a wrong line of thinking of saying Mason Saunders wanted to be closer to his horses because he's been going to Scottsdale for spring training for all these years in the Giants, so that's why he signed with the Diamondbacks. I think it's a little short-sighted. But I totally believe, and I think Mike Hazen just explained it, it was an advantage. Listen, the one thing here, players understand something. There is a massive advantage of signing with the Arizona Diamondbacks because Salt River Fields is a much better spring training home than anything that the Tampa Bay Rays have or the Miami Marlins have. So there are three teams in baseball that you can basically go to spring training and feel like you haven't moved. And those are the three teams. Well, now nothing compares to most players want to live in Paradise Valley, Scottsdale, blah, blah, blah. And now where are you doing spring training? The same place. It's a tremendous advantage. So players love that idea about being a Diamondback. The negative, and you fans aren't going to like it, is you're going to play in a dead barn. You're going to play in somewhere where you have to be totally professional every second and generate your own energy because you're not going to get it from fans. Because if a fan stands up with the bases loaded, there's going to be somebody that yells at them to sit down. So you have to be quiet at a Diamondbacks game. And the fans want it that way. So players don't want it that way. I would love to be able to change it, but I've kind of given up that fight over 13 years that you're just not allowed to stand up when the bases are loaded. That's the way it is. And if anybody wants to, if we want to have a stand-up section, the Doug and Wolf stand-up section, where we actually stand up when a game's exciting, maybe that's something we could promote this year. But players know, you're like AJ Pollock's going to slam the fans. You're going to be playing somewhere where you're not going to get that juice. So it's a give and take. For me, man, I would choose Diamondbacks every day of the week if I was a major league player. To not have to move for 1-2 months a year or stay right, oh, no-brainer. Coming up next, Cliff Kingsbury opened up about something that really I don't think any head coach has ever done in their life. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. For all the Rudy Carpenter haters, don't worry, Wolf's supposed to be back tomorrow. But I'll admit it to everybody. I love having Rudy on the show.
Thank you. Thank you. You guys are great.
I don't know.
I just don't like Bear, but everybody else is great.
That's awesome.
Wow.
That was fantastic. Rudy and I disagree on so many things, but it's fantastic. I love arguing back and forth with him. And I trust Rudy enough that he gets to hear all the arguments that happen between Maloney and me during a show, too. So I like you being a part of that. This is Cliff Kingsbury, and this is just fantastic. Do you really ever hear an owner, or excuse me, a coach be this honest about their human frailties? Because think about the nut job fan here when I play this for you. If you haven't heard this to the Ryan Russillo and the Ryan Russillo podcast, the nut job fan was going to go, basically, how dare you be human? Why were you thinking about a plan to fix it? Why didn't you figure out how to do this? And just yelling and screaming that the man dare had a thought of, in the middle of the first half, in the very first game you've ever coached in the NFL, things were going so wrong that you did something that's so unbelievably human.
Yeah, I'm not exaggerating. I was thinking, I can't believe I just bought that house. Like, I'm going to be here two games and they're going to fire me. This is because it was as bad as I'd ever seen. I mean, we couldn't get a yard and we couldn't complete a pass and every pass was knocked down. And I told everybody, well, he doesn't have passes batted down. You know, it doesn't happen. It doesn't matter that he's 5'10". He can manage them. So, yeah, that was about the highest anxiety I've ever had on the sideline. Just because it truly, anything we try to do is just complete disaster. But luckily, the second half got better, and we were able to come back and have a decent showing.
That sound is so deep to me because, number one, can it get more human than any of us who have moved your entire family for a job, and then it doesn't go well early on, and you're thinking, I've screwed a generation of my family. I've just totally dropped the ball on this. And he admits, I thought of the house. And then I remember where the moment that I really liked Cliff Kingsbury, and because I wasn't gung-ho about this hire, I'll admit it. I didn't stand on the table and say this is a joke, but at the same time I thought, this better work because I don't get it, was when he was in a press conference after a game when things started to go well for the offense. And I admit, I asked him, do you think, looking back in retrospect, it was a mistake to try to hide everything from everybody else because all you did was limit the opportunities in preseason to have your guys get familiar with what you're doing? And he said yes. He basically admitted, yeah. And for a coach to admit that mistake, and it was apparent, especially in that Lions game, because here was why it was such a stupid idea. Do you think the Lions have access to Texas Tech film? Do you think they can find air raid stuff? They know what you're going to do, and yet you guys weren't able to do it yet. And it's about your execution. So you kind of got lost, and we're going to fool everybody. And for him to admit it and start to play better offensively and then start mixing in different personnel groups that are anti-air raid, how do you not like the guy?
See, I think that the last thing you just said, I think that's the story of Cliff Kingsbury in his first year of the Arizona Cardinals. Look, when you look at Cliff Kingsbury, we've talked about it before. He was barely a 500 coach when he was in college, mm-hmm. but he was a guy that's been getting jobs and been getting jobs and getting good jobs. The thing that's interesting about Cliff Kingsbury is in today's world, when you tell the truth, or in today's world, when you admit you did something wrong, or in today's world, when you say, hey, I made a mistake and we fixed it and we course corrected, people don't give you a pat on the back or acknowledgement of you did the right thing or the benefit of the doubt. They jump on you more. And, well, why weren't you there in the beginning?
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you make those mistakes? Why did you even let those mistakes happen? And I think for a guy like Cliff Kingsbury just coming out and saying, hey, look, like, I don't know everything in the NFL. If I did, you know,
I would have been a coach a long time ago.
I've been a coach a long time ago, and I wouldn't have gotten fired from Texas Tech.
I'm so with you.
And so I think that Cliff did a really good job this year trying to communicate honestly about where the team was, the lack of maybe preparedness or preparation because of how they tried to hide some things early in the preseason. When things didn't go well, he was very honest about we didn't play well or I need to do a better job. And that was one of the things I thought Cliff did a really good job of all year long, was shouldering a lot of the weight of when things went wrong and taking on a lot of the things that he probably didn't need to. He could have pointed the finger at Kyler Murray and said, he's a first-year rookie. He's making a ton of mistakes. I was in here a few weeks ago, and I showed you a bunch of clips on my phone where Kyler Murray missed 7 or 8 big throws in a game. And I'm telling you, I watched every game, and that was every single game. Cliff could have easily pointed all that stuff out, but he understands, which tells me that he has self-awareness and he has self-confidence enough to know in his own ability as a coach that he doesn't need to point the finger. He doesn't need to blame. It's much easier for him to take that on himself and then lift up the people in his building. The other thing I think he did a good job of all year long, too, was taking advice from some of the older coaches who have been around the NFL for a long time. And we saw that when he changed some of the personnel groupings and some of the run game scheme. And so I give Cliff a lot of credit for that, because in today's environment, especially on social media and media in general, it's very, very difficult, and it can ruin your career if you do that.
Paul's call's coming up in just a second, but I tell you, you know, the draft, huge. The future of David Johnson, Kenyon Drake, whatever. These are bigger questions, but to me, one of the major questions that I have philosophically is, did he change, or because he now believes in something new and he wants to mix stuff in and this is the NFL and he accepts it, or did he change just because he felt like, I don't have the personnel to do what I want, and as soon as I get it, I'm going right back to who I used to be?
I think Cliff learned that you are going to have to adapt or you're going to die in this league if you don't. He died in college.
Well, then he's going to be a good coach. Coming up next, Paul's call sets the record straight, no matter what Rudy thinks about it. Next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Paul's Call is presented by Brooklyn Bedding. Order your mattress by 3. Get it delivered today free.
Hey, it's your call, man.
Oh, no.
It's your call.
My sound is the only wee rip dog around here.
Hey, nitwits. It's Paul's Call.
All right, so let's see here. Yesterday, if you've been scoring at home, Rudy and Paulie Prospect over here, we had our mock draft argument.
I don't know what we're yelling about!
You know, Doug, I'm just not taking it from these former NFL guys who sit in that chair. Rudy, Wolf.
One of these days, Wolf, when they go,
got to stand up for yourself on these airwaves.
They will destroy you!
That's right. Man, I'm not proud of it, but, you know, it happens. And besides, I mean, here in Sports Talk Radio, we got nothing on politics.
Politics is winner take all.
Did you guys hear the debate last night?
I think we were talking about math, and it doesn't take 2 hours to do the math. Because let's talk about what it is.
One at a time.
Let's talk about math.
Talk about math.
Okay, so here's the math thing. No, here's the math.
Let's not talk over each other for 2 hours.
Can I respond to the
attack? Doing nothing is what will happen.
Senator Sanders, you're allowed a quick response, and then we would like to allow the other people. Senator Sanders. Senator Sanders.
Moderator. Is it my turn?
The
circus.
Just want to notify you guys, we only have about 8 or 9 more months of this political process, so brace yourselves.
When you mess with the burn-o,
that's right,
you're going to get the burn,
right,
but you're never going to get my O.
Exactly.
Right.
When you mess with Paul's call, you get the sawed-off shotgun of sports, Rudy. Sports takes and a combine question about his Star of David necklace in Jerry Judy's direction?
So, my last name, Judy. People sometimes call me short for Jew, like one Jew. So, I just got a Jewish star. So, yeah. I'm not Jewish, though.
Thank you, Jerry Judy.
All righty then.
So, there's a Q&A that I didn't expect from the combine. didn't see that one. Here we go.
Next.
Thank you, Coach Ditko.
Next.
I might actually get it. I've never seen anybody get a politically incorrect necklace.
Yeah, so how about we go back to yelling?
Somebody hit somebody!
Are the Flint Tropics still in the G League?
Hey, I'm Jackie Moon. I work out a lot.
Because we have a minor league basketball coach with a major league rant.
The officiating definitely went right for Grand Rapids. That was as unprofessional as an officiating performance. I hope you tweet this out and tag the league, because that was embarrassing.
I hope you tweet this out and tag the league, says Chase Buford, head coach of the Wisconsin Herd.
Bueller.
No, Buford.
Bueller.
No, Buford.
Bueller.
The son of Spurs executive R.C. Buford, who he has an issue with an official.
Go ahead, Malloy!
And Coach Buford is naming names.
Matt Rafferty is a That being said, we have to be so much better at the end of games. We can't blow a 21-point lead with 12 minutes to go.
Wow.
Oh!
cow.
Now, did these refs officiate in the Indoor Football League Championship last year? Oh, wait.
What do you call the ref again, Matt?
Matt Rafferty is a...
Okay.
That being said, we have to be so much better at the end of games. We can't blow a 21-point lead with 12 minutes to go.
Your team blew a 21-point lead in the fourth quarter.
Brutal!
And you're ripping the refs?
That's just dumb.
What is wrong with America? There's no accountability. There's no culpability. I mean, why don't you just go Deontay Wilder and blame your costume?
And he said by the time he got in the ring and took it off, he felt like his legs were gone.
Okay, so Coach Chase Buford is gone.
Get out of here!
That's right. He's suspended two games, but here was the end of his rant. He closed it with,
however bad and biased and unfair and illegal and cheating the referees are, we have to be better closing games. And so that's the way I feel.
Unfair and cheating.
I mean, what?
However bad and biased and unfair and illegal and cheating the referees are.
I see. So the referees apparently were in the Astros dugout.
Banging a trash can to let the hitter know what pitch was coming.
Wow.
And cheating's wrong, Rudy.
Just to let you know, rare is the instance, but it does happen. In fact, it happened late last season. Taylor Lewan actually owned it. I mean, yeah, we got to go into the archives deep, but we do have an instance of one guy owning it.
I am completely screwing the team with the amount of penalties I've had in these last, six games? Yeah. It's crazy. It's horrible. Right. I cannot get penalties. I'm sorry. There's no need to ask about it because I know I'm an absolute liability when it comes to penalties.
I believe the stat, Paul, was he got suspended for four games and was leading the offensive line in penalties by week 10. And he only played six games.
I was going to say, he missed like the first month, right? Yes. So with that in mind, by the way, speaking of Deontay Wilder, let's hit the Gladiator costume update desk, because over in the UK, a certain boxer went viral. British boxer Dillian White, who's held the WBC interim heavyweight title since July of 19. He's been angling to fight Deontay Wilder, and yesterday when asked in a sit-down interview...
Are you slightly disappointed he lost because of that?
I'm disappointed, but I'll still fight that guy. Like, you know, I've waited so long to fight that guy. I've been chasing him for so long, and he's such a coward. I'll still fight him.
So he's ripping Deontay Wilder up and down, and at about the four-minute mark, he can't keep a straight face anymore when discussing the costume excuse. So listen.
He definitely needs surgery in his ears because his equilibrium is burst.
And then,
so I'm just laughing because he got beat up so bad.
And he's just laughing for about 30 seconds at the costume excuse. He can't keep a straight face anymore. He's just losing it.
Do you know how helpless it is, Paul, when you're sitting there and some guy's just losing it aimlessly and you have to wait till the end of the segment before he stops?
Wolf! Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. So they're calling that the best laugh since De Niro in Cape Fear, by the way. That's basically, that's what they're saying. So, yeah. Not a bad laugh from the combine, by the way. And as Coach Cliff Kingsbury continues to get more comfortable and the Cardinals continue to, by their plan, win more games, you're going to see more and more of his self-deprecating sense of humor. And there he was on the Russillo podcast and asked about the first half of his first game against Detroit. It was so bad, Coach.
Yeah, I'm not exaggerating. I was thinking, I can't believe I just bought that house. I'm going to be here for two games and they're going to fire me, because it was as bad as I'd ever seen. I mean, we couldn't get a yard and we couldn't complete a pass.
In fact, I went back to those stats from the first half of that game. Kyler Murray in the first half, 6 of 16 passing for 41 yards. He had a pick. He had a passer rating of 19.8. Think about that. And think about how he started the game.
19.8.
9 of 26. That's how bad it was.
19.
Big finish.
And now it's time for another edition of...
I'll be gold dang.
Things that make us say, Rudy.
I'll be gold dang.
Once upon a time, you were part of the college football dorms. Maybe you're in a frat. I don't know. What happens when you get a bunch of wacky college kids together?
Mr. Blutowski.
In this case, though, a bunch of pocket protectors who come together.
18 students at New York's Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute deciding to make a Chick-fil-A run, but they had to get past a logistical problem.
Dude, we need a Chick-fil-A run, man. Strevola Leveler. Dude needs a Chick-fil-A, but hang on, man.
The closest one beyond the TSA checkpoint at Albany International Airport. The next closest, an hour and a half away.
So here's the dilemma. There's a Chick-fil-A at the nearby airport, or we got to drive an hour and a half.
I'll be gall dang.
But the Chick-fil-A is behind the TSA. We're engineering students. You know, we got high IQs.
I'm an extremely stable genius.
We can figure this out.
So, to get that Chick-fil-A in the airport, the students split the cost of a plane ticket.
They buy a plane ticket to access the Chick-fil-A.
Totally.
I mean, yeah.
The cheapest one they could find, a $98 one-way ticket to Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Everybody pitch in. We're buying a $98 plane ticket.
Split 18 ways. It came out to about $5.50.
That's thinking $5 per dude or so is your cover charge to get to the Chick-fil-A.
I'll be gold dying.
Make it happen, man.
One of the students taking that ticket through security and shortly after returning with their $227 order.
We've got a Chick-fil-A run.
I'll be gold dang.
It's thinking. Tell me Chick-fil-A has hired this guy by now. You have to hire this guy.
You know, I mean, these guys are dudes in that frat house.
So stoked.
Right.
Like,
right.
I'm stoked.
That's right.
You stoked?
Simple things in life, like a chicken sandwich, man. Ball's gone.
How did the show make you feel?
Woo!
Doug and Wolf's.
It's all about the you. It's all about
the you. Brought to you by Carol Royce with Keller Williams Realty East Valley. Looking to buy a nice home and can't find one? Go to OurNiceHomes.com. That's OurNiceHomes.com.
My big takeaway from today's show is the fact that there's an airport Chick-fil-A that was prepared for a $220 order. Yeah. Could you imagine if they did all that mess and they go, wait, we've only got four sandwiches left.
By the way, that Detroit opener in fourth quarter and overtime, Kyler Murray, 20 of 29 for 238, two touchdowns, no picks, and a passer rating of 116.7. So that was a turnaround.
I love listening to stories from Paul about just dudes being dudes. But my big takeaway, I got to give a round of applause to Maria Sharapova. She retired today. Great, great, great tennis player. Good for her. Great career. Happy for her. Enjoy retirement.
Wow, aren't you a well-rounded guy? Rudy's got to go listen to a podcast. We'll listen to Bickley and Murata next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.